Welcome to MMA on the Rocks. My name is Bill Welker. You are listening to episode 344 of the podcast, unless you happen to be joining live on Twitter, YouTube, or Facebook. If you want to catch the show live, subscribe on one or all of those platforms. Turn on your notifications so you know when the show is live, like right now. Today is Monday, January 15th. And a happy birthday to Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. I guess a lot of you probably had the day off of work or from school. Hopefully not from school. I don't think there's any school-age people listening to this show, but my daughter was off from school today. It was a long weekend. Deservedly so. That is a man who has definitely earned being celebrated. One of my favorite quotes from Dr. King is the one about darkness cannot drive out darkness. Only light can do that. Hate cannot drive out hate. Only love can do that. That's an awesome quote. And I feel like it applies to so many things. For me, I think about it in terms of mental health. You know, when you start getting kind of negative and then the negative thoughts tend to pile on, the only way to kind of push them out is with positivity. And it's really so simple of a solution. But a lot of us struggle with it. You know, a lot of us end up in the dark sometimes and, try to pile on more darkness and swim our way out of it when really the answer is just shining a little bit of light. So I thank you, Dr. King, for those words that have always kind of resonated with me and along with many others. You know, he was a man with a lot of brilliant things to say, that and those words will live on forever. So we celebrate his birthday today, and we do it with, you know, a day off of work and or a day off of school, whatever it is. But, you know, it's important to reflect on why we have that time. So here we are. For a change, I'll lead off the show with this. MMA on the Rocks merchandise available through our friends at Team Reaper. Reaper1.co is the website. Promo code MMARocks10 will save you 10% on your order. Whether you buy my merchandise or not, you can get an over-the-top, under-the-influence t-shirt, tank top, or hoodie. I really should start working on getting some new merchandise, I guess. Maybe we need hats. I definitely want to do MMA on the Rocks whiskey glasses at some point. And the ultimate goal, if there's any distilleries out there listening, the ultimate goal has always sort of been to get my logo on a bottle of whiskey. So at some point, I'm going to end up doing like a barrel pick, working with some distillery or buying a barrel from a distillery and having a bottle of whiskey with my logo on it. If you can't tell, the logo for the podcast is designed after a whiskey label. It's made to look like a whiskey label for the sole fact that I want it to appear on a whiskey bottle one day. So that's the goal. Lofty goal, maybe. Possible goal, definitely. We can definitely make it happen. I know I can just go to a distillery and purchase a barrel of whiskey and then have it bottled with my label on it, but I guess I want it to happen a little more organically than that. So here we are on a Monday night. Let's talk about some fights. We just had I still don't understand how these things are numbered sometimes. UFC Fight Night 234 just happened, or UFC Vegas 84. I guess depending on how you're numbering them. So it was a rematch in the main event, Magomed Ankalaev against Johnny Walker. We know what happened in the first fight. Ankalaev lands an illegal strike, kneeing Johnny Walker while he was down. He could not continue, according to the referee. If you ask Johnny Walker, he was fine, and he could have continued, but referee decided it would be a no-go. So here we are. They rematch in the main event, and Johnny Walker was just a step behind in this fight the entire time. It seemed like he just couldn't fully get his bearings. After the first couple of minutes, when he realized Ankalaev wasn't fazed by any of the flashy stuff he was doing, he kind of went into almost like a panic mode, because Ankalaev was just staying so tight with everything he was doing. His defense was so tight, and he was just walking Johnny Walker down, which is something that guys aren't used to. Guys that have pulled off all this flashy shit before, and it's worked at a lower level, when they just get walked down by a guy who, you know, they're throwing all their tricks at them, and the opponent is just unfazed, that really kind of screws with your head. When you think like, man, I've pulled these moves off so many times, I've knocked out so many people with this, why is this guy not even reacting? And that's where Ankalaev really had the mental advantage. And then the skills were there as well. You know, I heard him say in a post-fight interview, he was like, I could have wrestled in this fight. I chose not to. I wanted to beat him, you know, where he's the strongest. And that's a badass move right there. That's a badass move. And of course, he's asking for a title shot. It was kind of scary the way that Johnny Walker went down as well. You know, the guy's been knocked out 5 times now. It was similar to the way he fell when he got knocked out by Jamal Hill. And then, you know, he put together a nice little win streak after that. But the way he went down with that kind of delayed reaction, it's scary. It really is scary. So I don't know. Maybe the guy is just too big. You know, I don't know how much weight he's cutting, but, you know, he's 6'5". He's a big dude. And maybe he needs to go up to heavyweight. You know, I know he's kind of like entertained the idea before, but it may be time for that. You know, when you're getting knocked out in such dramatic fashion, you know, it could be because the brain is still dehydrated. I think Johnny Walker's just having a hard time finding himself, man, because he's a guy with so much talent and so many physical gifts. You know, he's able to do things that bigger guys aren't able to do. And he just hasn't been able to put it together at the highest level. You know, I don't know if he was just put in there. It was too much too soon, which happens with guys of that talent level, you know, because they, you know, they're beating everybody at the lower level. Nobody wants to fight them. They're having all these flashy knockouts, but they're not quite ready for that upper echelon of competition yet. You know, and it's a tough spot to be in. So Johnny Walker is definitely going to need some time off, like a lot of time off after a knockout like that. I mean, he got his nose caved in by Ankalaev. What do you guys think? Do you think Ankalaev gets the title shot? I mean, if you look at it, the only people ranked above him are Jamal Hill, who's still injured, and Jiří Procházka, who just fought for the title. So like, if you go by the rankings, it makes sense. for Ankalaev to get a title shot next, but, you know, are we going by the rankings here? Do you think Ankalaev and Padilla sells? You know, it's two guys that aren't going to say a word leading up to the fight, not just because of the language barrier, just because they're both very stoic, very serious guys. You know, personality-wise, it's not a fight that sells per se. So you got to wonder what's going to happen there. You know, if I'm one of these guys in the top 10, like if I'm a Khalil Roundtree or a Volkan Ozdemir or a Jan Blachowicz, I'm screaming bloody murder to give me the Ankalaev fight because that's the quickest path to the title. You know, if Khalil Roundtree calls out Ankalaev, gets an impressive knockout win over him, and then cuts a promo immediately, you know, he'll be right in there for that title shot for sure. You know, we need to see with Padilla, we have like the stoic kind of B side to it. And he's got the mystique about him and he's got the highlight reel. It kind of sells itself, but you can't have another guy just like him on the other side. You kind of need that antagonist. You kind of need that, you know, that person that's going to get the clicks to put it bluntly. That's what you really need. And Ankalaev is not going to be that guy. He may very well be the best light heavyweight on the planet, but it's not as simple as that. It's not as cut and dry. You know, we kind of need to see a little bit more for him to get in there and get that title shot against a guy who's, you know, similar. It would be different if somebody like, you know, John Jones were still the champ at light heavyweight and then Ankalaev was presented as the guy who could dethrone him. You know, you could play that off a little differently, but as for now, it's not really an intriguing fight, Ankalaev and Padilla. You know, tell me if I'm wrong. You know, tell me what you guys think should be next. Who do you think should be fighting for that title? And if it's not Ankalaev, what's next for him? You know, if I'm Blachowicz, I'm screaming to the rooftops to get that rematch. You know, their fight was a dud. As far as the result goes, I thought it was a great fight. And I would love to see those two run it back. But, you know, as far as the promotion is concerned, it was a dud. We know Dana was not happy with that performance. And here's the fight I'm most excited to talk about. It's Jim Miller over Gabriel Benitez in the co-main event. Third round face crank for Jim Miller in what was one of his best performances. I mean, he came in here against, you know, the young, hungry guy in Benitez, who's like damn near a decade younger than him. And he just straight beat the shit out of him. There was something so satisfying about it. You guys know, if you've been listening to the show for a long time, I don't give a lot of bias when it comes to fights. I don't tell you guys I'm rooting for so-and-so. I try to keep things pretty neutral. You know, even when I'm breaking down fights, I won't tell you typically who I'm leaning towards. I'll tell you, here's the path to victory for fighter A. Here's the path to victory for fighter B. And I try to keep it pretty unbiased. There was something so satisfying about watching Jim Miller beat the shit out of Gabriel Benitez. You know, coming in there at 40 years old, planning to have a pretty quick turnaround and get back in there for UFC 300 so he could say that he fought at UFC 100, 200, 300. just everything he's been through, most octagon time, most fights, all the records, the fact that he's still getting in there and beating the fuck out of people is so awesome. Like, how do you not love Jim Miller? And not only is he doing that, but he's still adding new tools. You know, we saw him utilizing the leg kick on Saturday night. He threw more leg kicks in that fight than he has in any other fight in his UFC career, in his 40-something fights in the UFC. And he wasn't just attacking the lead leg. He was attacking the rear leg of Benitez. Just throwing him off, throwing everything with some thunder behind it. And then he gets him to the ground and just manhandles him, face cranks him into submission. What a badass. What a badass Jim Miller is. You know, he just decides, like, I'm just going to rip this dude's head off his neck. And face cranks suck. I would say they're worse than a rear naked choke, because with a rear naked choke, you could choose to just kind of go to sleep. You know, when properly applied, it puts pressure on the carotid artery, cuts off the blood flow to your brain. And, you know, if you don't tap, you go to sleep for a little while. No big deal. With a face crank, it feels like your jaw is going to explode, and it's so uncomfortable. So there's something a little bit more savage to that than getting somebody in a rear naked choke. There's something just a little bit more brutal to, you know, trying to rip somebody's head off as opposed to trying to put them to sleep. You know, just in the description alone, like, oh, I'm going to put you to sleep. I'm going to let you take a nap here, or I'm going to rip your fucking face off. You know, the absolute savagery of Jim Miller, you got to respect it. If you're not a fan of Jim Miller, you have to at least respect him for everything he's accomplished and coming out here and putting the beating on this kid that he did at 40 years old. And he was fighting like the younger fighter. You know, he had Benitez backing up for most of this fight. He was pushing the pressure. He wasn't waiting for Benitez to go and counter strike. You know, he was the one pushing the pace. Awesome. Just awesome. And then he goes and calls out Paul Felder and Brock Lesnar. You got to love Jim Miller. He says he's going to Kimura Brock Lesnar. I guess we get into that a little bit. So there's some rumors floating around that Brock Lesnar could come back for UFC 300. The UFC kind of announced that it would be Bilal Muhammad and Leon Edwards as the main event for UFC 300. I think they're just kind of floating that out there to get the fan reaction. And they did. You know, there's been some great memes. I saw one. Somebody posted. I always wish I write these things down so I can give people credit. Because I do like to credit people for great memes, but it was a broken car window. And they said, you have to be careful because I left my UFC 300 tickets, two UFC 300 tickets on the seat of my car, and somebody broke in and left me two more. That's just a great joke. I enjoyed that meme. So whoever crafted that one, kudos to you, and cheers to you as well. By the way, dry January is a bust. I tried it. You know, I went two full weeks and it was great. Felt some benefits, dropped a little weight, lost some like bags under my eyes, felt great. But you know, a little nightcap has helped the last couple of days. My wife is away on a business trip in Atlanta. She's working the America's Mart at the big convention center downtown Atlanta. And she won't be back until Monday. So I've just been pretty run down. You know, it was a 3-day weekend with the kiddo who just turned 6 years old, and she's awesome. I love her to death, but she's just nonstop energy. And it's a lot to keep up with. We went to Busch Gardens yesterday. We had a blast, went on some rides, saw some animals. For those not familiar with Busch Gardens, it's like a theme park and zoo rolled into one. So we did that. Probably did like 20,000 steps there. And she did it too. I didn't really have to carry her or anything. A couple of piggyback rides here and there to get from A to B, but for the most part, she walked the whole thing. Yeah, she's awesome, but she just knows how to wear you out. You know, she weaponizes cardio, as we say in the MMA world. But back to school tomorrow, so that'll be good. And then I can get back to, you know, being dry during the week. And I've also been strictly carnivore diet for the most part this month. So for those who missed the last few episodes, for the month of January, I was going to do no alcohol, which is already out the window. Carnivore diet, strict carnivore diet, and cold plunges 3 days a week. And the cold plunges have been good. They're kind of a pain in the ass to set up, you know, because I have to. My wife bought me a like a commercial ice maker, so it makes a ton of ice, but it's still not enough to get the water cold enough. So I have to let it make a full batch of ice, take it out, put it in a cooler, do that like 3 or 4 times, and then use all that ice to fill up the cold plunge the next day just to get it down below 50 degrees. I have seen some benefits. You know, I twisted my knee a couple of weeks ago doing jiu-jitsu. It felt like possibly an MCL sprain. You know, I'm not a doctor or anything, but I've had a lot of injuries and I just kind of know what things feel like. So to me, it felt like an MCL sprain. I thought it was going to be 2-week minimum recovery, but I did the cold plunge 2 days in a row. And it was fine, like back to 100% strength. So there may be something to it. I've been doing another test. If you've been following on my Instagram stories, I have this huge bruise on my leg from, I think it's from Muay Thai sparring. And I'm going to see if the cold plunge helps heal that up. Because it's such a pain in the ass, I don't think it's something that I'm going to incorporate regularly going forward. But definitely, if I have like a nagging injury, I will use it for recovery. I definitely feel like it's effective. I just don't know if all the effort it takes to get the cold plunge going will be totally worth it going forward. So we'll see what we decide to do, and we'll see if some, you know, cold plunge company decides to reach out and sponsor the podcast. That would change things as well. Because you can get like a chiller that you attach to the tub where it'll run the water through something, some kind of machine that makes the water cold, and you can set the temperature, and that would be awesome. But those things go for like $1,000. So unless some company out there wants to send me one to try out, I'm going to keep shoveling ice cubes. All right, moving on here. Mario Bautista with an impressive win over Ricky Simone. He did great with the footwork and getting his underhooks. His boxing looked really crisp. After the first round was really close. You know, Ricky dropped Mario in that first round, but after that round, Mario kind of ran away with it a little bit. And he looked good. I mean, that's a great win, a win over Ricky Simone. That's not a guy that a lot of people get over on. So he's going to get himself into the top 15 rankings now, because Ricky was ranked 13th, just above Umar Nurmagomedov. it'll be interesting when the rankings come out. I don't know if they'll put Batista above Nurmagomedov. You know, we'll have to see what happens there. And then he called out Rob Font, which I like that call out. I like that fight. I think it's a fun fight. So yeah, I'd say put that together, because if you look at the people above him, you know, Jonathan Martinez would make sense. And that's a great fight as well. And Pedro Munoz, I wouldn't say anybody above Rob Font. Rob Font's ranked number 9 right now. But yeah, any of those would be great matchups for Mario Bautista. I thought he looked really good against Ricky Simon. And then the most brutal knockout of the night, I'd say Bruno Fedeia over Phil Hawes. Man, you know, sometimes we have guys, you know, like Josh Emmett, who know when somebody is KO'd and they back off and they even get a thank you from their opponent, like Bryce Mitchell did, saying how grateful he was that Josh Emmett didn't follow up. Then we have guys like Bruno Fedeia, who, you know, Chris Tognoni basically had to pull him off of the cadaver of Phil Hawes here. It was pretty terrifying, like, to think about what he would have done if Chris Tognoni wasn't in there. Like, he seemed like he was ready to murder that man. And he came pretty damn close. It was a pretty ferocious knockout right at the end of round one for Bruno Fedeia. So if you guys missed that one, go back and check that out. Andre Arlovsky lost the unanimous decision to Waldo Cortez Acosta. This was just, you know, Arlovsky is so skilled and so experienced that he was able to kind of survive in there, but he wasn't able to mount any real offense. And, you know, he looked pretty soft compared to what we're used to seeing from Andre Arlovsky. You know, there's definitely some extra weight he's carrying around. You know, if you guys remember Andre Arlovsky from back in the day, he was shredded at heavyweight. You know, he was in the 230 to 240 range, but just ripped. Like, he looked like he cut weight, even though he didn't have to. You know, we didn't see that at, what is he, 42? Let's see. 44. Yeah. What a damn legend, though, man. I mean, you got to respect, this guy has been fighting in the UFC since, I know I said this on Thursday because I looked it up. I forgot. 24 years in the UFC. Damn near it. November of 2000, he made his UFC debut. Submitted Aaron Brink in 55 seconds with an armbar. That's as long as some of you have been alive. And I'm sure it's longer than a lot of you have been watching MMA. You know, I know if you're listening to this show, you're definitely a hardcore MMA fan. But have you been watching long enough to see the debut of Andre Arlovsky? Have you been around that long? Look, I'm not in the business of retiring people, but I think Andre Arlovsky is a Hall of Famer. I don't think he has anything left to prove. He's nowhere near the top 15 right now. I don't know what he's still fighting for. Like, he definitely doesn't need to. I guess he just loves to compete. But yeah, this was a case of, we really kind of saw him look his age, and it was sad. It was sad to see. So unless he changes something up drastically, you know, I wouldn't mind if he hung it up, and you know, we could just get him in the Hall of Fame already. Like, I think it's a no-brainer to put this man in the Hall of Fame. 24 years. Obviously, he wasn't in the UFC the whole time. He was over at Strikeforce. He fought for Affliction. Then he came back to the UFC. But, you know, two-time heavyweight champion. He's done it all. He's fought everybody. Like, he's a Hall of Famer. I don't want to hear any arguments about that. If you don't want to see Andre Arlovsky in the Hall of Fame, you're not an MMA fan. I'll just say that. Preston Parsons, unanimous decision over Matthew Semelsberger. Just didn't allow Semelsberger to get anything going in this fight. Simple as that. Marcus McGee knocked out Gaston Bolanos 3 or 4 times. This fight could have been stopped a couple of times. You know, he had him KO'd. Marcus McGee kind of backed off, but the referee didn't stop the fight. Okay. You know, it's Mark Smith. He was giving Bolanos the benefit of the doubt. Fine. So then they're calling the TKO a result of the spinning wheel kick, but the fight was over before that happened. Marcus was just like, well, let me get a highlight reel out of this now. Marcus McGee's a bad man at 135 pounds. This guy is just, I don't know. At one point, he just kind of tossed Bolanos. And I just wonder how strong this guy is. You know, he's 5'8", 135 pounds. I don't know how he makes that, because this dude is solid muscle. And I say this with all due respect. I would love to grapple Marcus McGee. Not competitively, but I would just love to get a roll with him in jiu-jitsu just to feel, because I've trained with bantamweights before. I've trained with 135-pound guys before who had really good technique. And it's fine, you know. You know, they present problems in their own way. I don't think I've ever grappled or sparred 135-pound guy who was built like this. And I'm kind of curious what it would feel like. So, Marcus, I know you live on the other coast. If you ever find yourself in the Tampa Bay area, I would love to get some training with you. I want to feel what that strength is like. And I would also love to know what he walks around at and how big his weight cut is. Because he just seems like he's built out of concrete, you know, like he's like a statue, like a Greek statue. And I just don't know how he carries that much muscle in a 5'8" frame and makes 135 pounds. Impressive performance, nonetheless. And then the first 3 fights on the card, all TKOs. First round, second round. Gene Silva, TKO over Weston Wilson. Nicholas Mata, TKO over Tom Nolan. And in the opening fight, Joshua Van, TKO in the second round over Felipe Bunes. Bunes. I didn't catch that one. But great card. Glad to have MMA back in our lives. You know, maybe it wasn't a great card. Maybe we've just been deprived of MMA so long that it seems better than it was. But I think it was good. I was entertained. I think it was an awesome night of fights. So there's that. Now we have the first pay-per-view of the year to look forward to coming up on Saturday, UFC 297. From the Scotiabank Arena in Toronto, Ontario, Canada. Kind of an odd place to have a pay-per-view headlined by a guy from America and a guy from South Africa. But here we are. We're going to meet up in neutral territory in Canada. A lot of heat between these guys, Sean Strickland and Dricus du Plessis. They had that fake brawl, a few weeks ago, or, you know, was it over a month ago at this point? Where, you know, the cameras were on them and Strickland asked Gilbert Burns' family to move and then proceeded to hit Dricus with some fake WWE-type strikes. And I know me saying that a few weeks ago pissed a lot of you off. I apologize for nothing. I don't change my opinion. He was definitely not trying to hurt Dricus. If he wanted to, he probably would have. He had the whole back of his head exposed. He could have hit him with some hammer fists in the back of the head and done some serious damage. Instead, hit him with his forearm across his back like a WWE wrestler would to someone that they didn't want to actually hurt. And we're never going to get the real story because Sean Strickland's never going to admit that he was holding back. If Dricus was in on it as well, he's never going to admit it. So it's a moot point to argue about it, but it was fake. So, you know, whether you choose to accept it or you want to be a mark is up to you. But here we are. They're about to fight for real in a 5-round main event. And here's what these two guys have in common, Strickland and du Plessis. They both have won fights that they're not supposed to win. Sean Strickland was not supposed to beat Israel Adesanya, and he damn near made it look easy. Dricus du Plessis was not supposed to beat Robert Whittaker, and he damn near made it look easy. They're similar in that regard. For a 5-round fight, Sean Strickland's going to have the cardio advantage. Dricus has appeared to gas out in 3-round fights. When I say appeared to, I mean he looked like he was gassed out, but continued to fight and push the pace. Will he be able to do that for 5 rounds against someone like Sean Strickland? And how is this fight going to play out? Is Dricus going to try and take Sean Strickland down? Sean Strickland is a very competent wrestler. Offensively and defensively, we just don't see it. But I know people who have trained with him, and I can assure you the man can wrestle. The man can grapple. He's got a black belt in jiu-jitsu. I don't know if he's ever used it inside the octagon, but he's got it. He's got those tools. He's got those weapons. I don't know how this one plays out. I really don't. One of these guys, I feel like, is going to have a mental edge. One of them is going to get in the other one's head. I don't know which is which. We'll break it down further on Thursday when we do picks and pours with Matt the Mechanic. For those who aren't aware, we've been doing an extra episode every week of MMA on the Rocks. It comes out on Thursday nights. It also broadcasts live now on Thursday nights on YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter. So you can catch that where I invite my buddy, Matt the Mechanic, who I've trained many years with in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. He wanted to start doing a segment where he picked fights because I don't like to pick fights. It's not something I do. I don't like the idea of me talking about who I think is going to win and people spending their hard-earned money betting on that pick. But if my buddy's going to do it, he's going to come on and make some picks. And I can, you know, break his balls over them, then great. Let's do that for sure. So we'll be back Thursday with that episode. And he'll be making his picks on the main card of UFC 297. Co-main event, Raquel Pennington against Mayra Bueno Silva for the vacant bantamweight championship. And I have not heard a single person talk about this fight. And I don't plan to be the first one. So moving on, Neil Magny against Mike Malott. They're just going to continue to use Neil Magny to build up these young studs, I guess, just to kind of, you know, Neil Magny is like the barometer in the welterweight division. Like, where do you stand? You know, if you can't get past him, like, you're probably not going to cut it in general. But if you can, you know, win over Neil Magny is still impressive, even given his most recent performance. Chris Curtis and Marc-Andre Barrialt. So Chris Curtis, teammate of Sean Strickland, going to be fighting on the same card. That's interesting. This is going to be a fun fight with Marc-Andre Barrialt. Arnold Allen and Movsar Evloev. This will be a really interesting matchup. This might be my favorite fight on the card. We're going to see how Arnold Allen bounces back from his first loss in the UFC to Max Holloway. That was back in April. So we're going to see what he kind of retooled there. And, you know, Evloev is going to do what he does, and he's going to try and grapple the fuck out of Arnold Allen. So let's see how that goes. You know, Evloev's still undefeated. He had a pretty hard time with Diego Lopez in his last fight back in May. But to be fair, that was a last minute opponent. And we've seen since then that Diego Lopez is a problem, for everybody that he fights. So, no shame there for Evloev. Then we got, Brad Katona and Garrett Armfield. Okay. Charles Jourdain and Sean Woodson. This is an interesting fight. Woodson presents a lot of problems, you know, being a featherweight and being like 9 feet tall. And he fights like a Stretch Armstrong doll. You know, he definitely presents a lot of problems in this division, but Charles Jourdain, I feel like is one of these dark horses in the division that a lot of people sleep on. This guy is super skilled. So I like that fight a lot. Jillian Robertson and Pollyanna Viana on the prelims here. That's a fun fight. And opening fight, Malcolm Gordon and Jimmy Flick, who Jimmy Flick, if you guys remember, came on the scene, you know, through the Contender Series, and then he, you know, came out of the gate with a flying triangle win, and then like kind of retired, and it was so bizarre, and then he decided to come back 3 years later. And has since lost two in a row. So we'll see how it goes Saturday night against Malcolm Gordon. I'm excited for this pay-per-view. I think top to bottom, it's a pretty solid card. And I think it's going to be fun. So stay tuned for Picks and Pours on Thursday. Try and catch that live. So if you subscribe on Facebook, Twitter, or YouTube, you can turn on your notifications and catch us live for that. Usually around, we shoot for 9 p.m. to record, but I have a late jiu-jitsu class on Thursdays, so by the time I get home and eat and shower and all that, we usually get going around 9:30 p.m. Eastern. So if that's doable for you, definitely jump on a live feed. It's always fun when we have people, you know, kind of even trolling or doing whatever on the live feed. I enjoy all that stuff. If you guys know me, I never block anybody from watching or listening to the podcast. I never block anybody on social media. So go ahead and troll away. I love it. You know, bring it on, which I think stops a lot of people from trolling me because they know it doesn't bother me. But in any case, this has been fun. I have to get some sleep because I have to wake up early tomorrow, get my daughter ready for school all on my own this week while the wife is away. So much respect for all the single parents out there. You know, I get to experience it for a week out of the year every year, and it's not fun. So respect to everybody who's out there doing it every damn day. You know, you're the real savages, because it's rough, man. It's rough. These kids have so much energy. It's hard to match. It's hard to keep up with, let alone match. Anyway, that's all I got. So until next time, which will be Thursday night, 9 p.m., 9:30 p.m. Eastern. Cheers, everybody. Goodbye.